town meeting.
10:02.
Let's bring this meeting to order. I'd like to start by introducing our good friend, Chris Roper. He is the chair of the city's Parks and Recreation Commission.
Well, we can't have him in here.
You what?
They won't have him in here.
Right. Oh, don't
scratch my hand.
Don't take it serious.
Well, you guys want to come by today and just say hi and sit in for a little bit. As everybody knows, I'm sure Kelly shared it, that on next Friday, from 3:30 to 5:30 at the Steiger House, the Weber Arboretum, there's going to be a kind of a joint gathering of both the commissions, light orders, and some drinks and that kind of stuff. And everybody's welcome, spouses included. But it should be a good time just kind of to sit around and get to know each other and just talk. And I think what we kind of did was the key staff and that kind of stuff, if they want to please have them show up too.
Sure.
Absolutely. I'm just going to sit down a little bit, just hear what you guys have to say, and just kind of sit in. But thank you.
Why don't you feel good? Join us up here at the table.
Okay.
I'm not going to stay in the whole time, okay?
I'm not either.
This is a marathon meeting.
Unfortunately, I'm not either. But.
What was that? I'm sorry, Bill. Ask the ice shaving duct tape.
But thank you. I appreciate it.
So let's do roll call to prove that we've got a forum here. I guess we do anyway. Barbara?
Barbara here. Anderson, yeah.
I'm here. Yes. Marcia's here. And Candace is here. That makes it a quorum. We have our
Officio.
Chris Fay here. Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
We wanted to start off, let's approve the minutes from the last meeting. Anybody want to?
I have a correction.
Okay.
The motion, where are they? The motion for the, motion to approve the county parks donation and memorial policy was tabled, and there was no indication of that.
And we will address
that. And
it
we'll
today.
Address that today, yeah.
Okay. Do note it. Do I make the motion to approve?
Move to approve as amended.
Okay.
I'll second it.
Okay. All in favor? Aye. All opposed? And approved. One item down.
Are you taking notes, Leanne? It looks like it.
I'm taking some notes, yeah.
Oh, okay, because I was busy over here trying to take the minutes. But if you're doing it, I...
I wasn't...
Oh, okay, I'll do it then.
No. I don't...
No. Okay. I just thought I'd ask because I saw your fingers going.
She's doing her grocery list.
So we have on the agenda next the election of officers, and do you want to go ahead and move with that, Mr. Bierke?
Yes.
Okay. We can do
well.
That.
I know it's kind of an opportunity since our entire board's not here.
Yeah.
But,
can we table this until January?
Until January. It looks like it's probably going to be the best bet. So it would be nice to have our elections.
Good time for meetings, period.
Yes,
agreed.
Well, we've got a lot of stuff on our plate, and timing is there's some important stuff. So
let's do that.
I think if people want to get involved.
I move that we table the election of officers until January meeting.
Is there a second?
I'll second it.
Okay, all in favor?
Any
opposed? Okay. Okay, so unfinished business. We've got the naming policy that we met over at the Vancouver School District on, I forget what day that was,
and I just want to say thank you for taking the time to hold that meeting so we could further discuss the commemorative naming policy and some of the details we needed to review over again, and it looks like we had worked that out to everybody's satisfaction. So what I'm seeking today is the support to carry that commemorative naming policy to the board.
I'll move to approve the commemorative naming. Let me get that right.
Naming of parks and recreation.
Move to approve the Parks Donation and Memorial Policy as amended.
That one,
that's another one. Naming Parks and Recreation Facilities.
Yes.
We approved the other one already.
Oh, okay.
The commemorative
naming of parks and parks facilities.
You second that? And all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed?
Second came from Candace.
Thank you.
I think you've got that, so that'll go whenever you can take it to the...
Yes, we'll take it to consent next Tuesday.
So that is the unfinished business that we had. I don't know if you, Candace, got the chance to see what we modified that. I don't see that it shows our changes in this particular document.
It doesn't show the changes, but I've read it.
Yeah, okay. So I felt like there was a good discussion and that we did a good job of bringing that up to today's standards and included the various school districts throughout the county, not just the two. There was some other
changes. Thank you.
The one thing we did that I'll just bring up just for the sake of it is we did maintain that 5-year time period to make sure that the motions of anything are passed. I think that was appropriate. That, I'm going to turn the meeting back to Bill.
Okay.
And Bill's going to turn it over to the consultants, I believe.
Yes, and just one thing, given our low turnout here today, Gene came here ready to present, you know, all the information. Are we comfortable with carrying forward as an informational meeting? Once Kelly leaves, we will no longer have a quorum. And so this will become an informational meeting, and I think it would serve the folks here to go through this information. I know that these handouts have gone to everybody by email, and then we also have these handouts here today as well.
Right.
Would it serve us best to postpone this information until January, or should we take the time to go through it today?
Well, I've got to say I'm a little pulled because I think this is really great information. And I know I'm comfortable, you know, I've got a couple of questions after reviewing it, but I really feel that some of the other members need to hear this.
Agreed.
And yet it devalues the people that showed up today if we don't give them something. So I'm pulled on that.
But I'm not comfortable going ahead with something like that with this limited group. I feel the same way you do. I mean, I even printed this out at home so I could read more. But I just don't feel like I'm ready to do that. I'm sorry. So I'd like to move to table this information and presentation until our January meeting.
Do I hear a second on that?
I want to second that.
You're going to second it? Okay. I think it's been moved and seconded.
Adam will be here in 15 minutes, he says.
All right. Okay.
Does that change the...
What we could do is go through an abbreviated presentation of this material so that for those of you that are still digesting it, you can start to digest a little faster because there's no vote at the end of this.
No.
This is really trying to just sort of ferment and foment a lot of questions that really the full board needs to be discussing.
I agree.
So what it could do is give those of you who are here a head start on, oh, okay, now I get it. These are the things I want to bring up in January, February, whatever. And we can have those prepared as a list of questions along with some 7 or 8 questions that I have that at the end of this, I think you need to be asking to be thinking about, okay, for the future, where does this direct us? So you would have a head start today, but as I said, there's no final recommendation or vote, and we can abbreviate it. I won't go through the whole tech memo, but maybe just the PowerPoint presentation to get you started, and then some of these questions, again, get it started. And what I'd like to be able to do, if Leanne or Jeremy or somebody can, is keep track of all the questions that are asked so that we have a good, you know, idea of what are the burning issues and where are there gaps in comprehension or concerns about the system. So it's up to you guys.
That would be great to give us an abbreviation. I mean, I'm always open to hearing it again. Every time I hear this, I learn a little more.
I don't want to numb anybody or bore anybody.
No, you're never that slow.
So I haven't been accused of going too slow, but.
So are you willing to redo it then when the rest of the board's here?
Yeah, I think that everybody, but an abbreviated one for us today is great, because every time I hear it, I do learn.
Okay, and there will be an audio that the people who aren't here today
Yeah, but they won't do that. They won't do that. I mean, let's be honest. But I do think it's very, very important that we do get this to the
We're going to withdraw the motion. You're going to do abbreviated or the PowerPoint. I would like it if there's a way that you can redo that again at the next whenever it's rescheduled.
Yeah, we just changed the date.
Because the people that are missing here are the ones
marvelous.
We need.
You'll get here about the same time as Adam then. That's marvelous. Thanks, John. We'll look forward to seeing you. Okay, no.
But I have more than four.
So we'll have.
Okay, so here we go.
It's still
John's on his way. He's caught in traffic.
So Kelly, what time do you have to leave?
I better leave. No.
Yeah, but Kelly knows.
Yeah, I know.
You know
intimately. Yeah.
So the other question would be when the other two get here, and we're getting it in the heat of it.
So really, everybody's here except Greg Foster.
Yeah, and so I think let's just take a 5-minute break, waiting for these people.
Yeah.
Okay.
And then we can hit it.
Are they going to be here by then, though?
Adam said 15 minutes, and John just said he's on the bridge, but he's stuck in traffic, and it should be here within 15 minutes.
Excuse me, but how long do you think this is going to take? That's a good question. She has to leave. They're just coming. I mean, it's kind of a...
I think it'll be disjointed, so...
That's what I'm concerned about.
If there aren't a whole lot of questions as we move through it.
But if you've got most of the team, you could
5 minutes to
you could do a whole.
But everybody's got questions about all these issues.
Right.
Is there anything else that we need to do other than that we can do before everybody else gets here?
Is there anything else left?
That's the last thing, right? Is this?
Yeah, it's this. This is all we have. This is why we were here today.
Okay.
This is it.
So while we're waiting, does everybody have the executive summary? It's a front back page thing.
Yep.
Do we just want to stop?
Yeah, it's a front one.
Are we waiting with everybody? Just to sort of make sure we're
up. Two copies. Anybody want another?
No, I got two copies. One I printed and one I.
Yeah, me too. I can't sit and read on my computer. I got to print everything.
Yeah, I'm same way.
See it.
Yeah. It's a little two pager, this one. You know, I have just a question we might discuss a little bit, because I know that one of the things that we've heard from the commissioners is, you know, when we redirected the way that the PIP was administered as far as what's acquisition and what's development, and I think that it's pertinent to this, is one of the things that I keep balancing and trying to figure out in my mind is that I have a lot of concerns because, well, specifically in our district, for example, when we found out that we had mostly wetlands for the Chinook Park and we went looking, I took the whole area and looked at it. Land, once it's gone, it's gone.
Yes.
And so I have concerns that as we try to balance the availability of land versus delaying implementation or development of a park, what's the trigger that sets the thing, you know, get the land while it's available versus we haven't developed what we've got? That's really one of the things I struggle with that I hope that you can address in part of this.
Should we be looking at different standards so that parks actually get developed, become useful, and can be maintained? My big problem with them is maintenance. I want to make sure that you're not just buying land and leaving it. Of course, I love the idea.
Well, what's wrong with that, though?
Open land.
If it's gone, it's gone. If we don't maintain what we have, or what we have set
aside. But if it's gone, it's gone. It's the problem. You've got to change.
And that's the problem.
But there's two different things. Is it developed land, or is it land that we're holding on to develop? Because if it's land we're holding on to develop, the maintenance isn't.
It's just open space.
But if it's developed and there's no maintenance, that is a big deal. So I think there's kind of two different.
How do we get into the area where we start looking at larger chunks of land for more, I don't want to say community, but more huge areas that we want to cover with one large unit? I don't know how to say. What's
like
the
well, that, that's, that'll go with the standards as you see the production of the property.
Yeah, I'm concerned about the standards.
Well, but see,
I have three parks within a half mile and a half. What?
Well, you're very fortunate.
She's like,
you know, because I don't have one.
Send some out our way. It's a stupid waste of money and time. And to me, that's just crazy. And when you talk to maintenance people, you find out that all these little patchwork parks are killing them because they have to load the equipment every day.
And
they
move it.
They pay gas on every one of those things.
Yeah.
They move from park to park.
Well, you're very, very fortunate. That's not an issue.
Can you be specific about that? I'd like to hear Bill address that.
Tell me about that.
That's a pretty bold statement to
me. Well, our neighborhood parks, of course, the intent is to have a park within a half-mile range of folks, for the most part. And as far as our level of service, that's our utopian approach is to meet that someday. And so if you have three parks within a half mile of you, you're very fortunate. But in many areas around the county, they don't have that. And so
that's the one thing that...
What's that? Well, that's part of doing business. I mean, neighborhood parks, we have to maintain them, and that's what they do. They go from park to park to park. They'll go to a neighborhood park, they'll go to a community park. They just go through, they call it a circuit, that they do on a daily basis.
And the maintenance is not an issue? The cost?
No.
Because they're
smaller
patchwork parks?
Not really. No, neighborhood parks do cost a little bit more than community parks because of the acreage, you know, and yes, you know, they have to load up and go, you know, and unload and perform the basic maintenance, move on. With community parks, you know, of course, you've got natural areas within the developed areas of community parks, but the entire area of the park, let's say it's a 50-acre park, we're not maintaining that, but we're accounting towards our maintenance per acre, you know. So with neighborhood parks, typically 100% of it's developed, and so they're maintaining the entire site. So naturally, that cost is going to be higher. And so community parks are lesser expensive, and regional parks are yet lesser expensive than community parks, except for this site here. This is probably the most expensive site we've got.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that's why I was thinking about establishing a higher level of service for this particular property. But no,
but this serves a larger area too.
It does. It's a community facility. But no, I don't. That's not a concern with me. You know, to bring on more neighborhood parks. The one concern that we do have is that back in 2010, we included, we actually transferred several general fund parks into the Metropolitan Park District system because it's in the urban unincorporated area. Well, that's a $1.5 million hit to the MPD system to maintain those sites. What we're trying to actively do right now is pull those parks back out and put them into general fund. Our Board of County Commissioners, when they approved the budget, they gave us $150,000 to transfer some parks back into general fund, which is 10% of what we need to have transferred. But we're going to keep that goal and keep moving that direction. If we can pull that $1.5 million out of the MPD responsibility, we will have ample money to complete our 35 parks and probably even a couple of additional parks as well. So that's where we're at right now. But having parks, you know, within a half mile radius of people that can get to it is our ultimate goal.
Let me say this. Let's put your address in the computer and plot those three parks out so we can have a good answer for you, a factual answer for you on that particular piece for next time.
Yeah, because I'm in.
I want to put that on the map. And then we'll do the measurement.
Maybe a little farther.
Yeah, and that's I want to know that because it's well, neighborhood parks are supposed to be within walking distance. We do not put parking in neighborhood parks, so I want to see that plotted out.
Do you
and that'll be the answer.
Do you get a lot of complaints that since we're just going on with this while we're waiting? Do you get a lot of complaints about no parking at neighborhood parks?
I do from time to time.
Yeah.
I'll get probably 10 or 12 a year. Yes.
But the standard is what? Four spots
on street.
On street park and by a neighborhood park.
Neighborhoods.
Yeah, because the intent is for people to be able to walk.
To be walking.
Correct. Some people are very comfortable with parking in front of other people's homes. That's but
like our new neighbor puts cones up.
Well, let's get back to topic then now that we've got Adam here, and I'm gonna bow out. If we can give that back to Jane to move to what you were going
so,
to.
So the discussion is very key in the evolution of all of this, because
it is very
there is an existing set of standards. The combination of development and acquisition does raise some very good questions in terms of implementation. Where's the equity? Is there going to be geographic equity? Is there fairness? If some people don't have any parks within walking distance and others can go in three different directions and hit a park, I happen to live in a city and I can hit two different parks within not quite half a mile, but pretty close.
Yeah.
So I feel really fortunate that I have choices. But not everybody has choices. So I asked Jeremy to put up the current map of where all the parks are. And this includes the undeveloped sites. So this is basically the walk shed. And we'll go through this in the PowerPoint presentation. Right. But if you look at that, overall, so ignore the city part, but in all this section of, 5 through 10, where the blue is. Whoa, you're making it look like a wind is blowing. Where all that blue is, that's where if you live within any of those blue spots, you can walk to a park somewhere. But if you looked at that, that's very spotty across all five districts. So one of the goals that has become a target or guidelines, not a technical quantitative standard, is everybody should be able to walk to a park somewhere, whether it's a neighborhood park or a community park, or at the very least a trail or something. So that's something to keep in mind as we look at these standards and wrestle with, do you adjust them now? Do you adjust them in 10 years? Do you adjust them in 20 years? Are you looking at the population changes? Issues like that. So it's a really good question, and it will be one of the several different questions that will evolve. And the maintenance question and the land banking, if you want to call it that, acquire now while you still can. Those are all weighed in that balance. And part of that is going to be your job to decide, should it be a policy in a certain direction? Or is it up to the discretion at the time for staff to make a decision? They only have so much money. Does it go to develop this park or does it go to buy this future park? Is it a limited opportunity? So that's a tough question. So, and it's always been something that has been primarily staff-driven to execute with concurrency issues of you only have these $50 for a six-year period. You've got to spend them on something. Is it acquisition or is it development? And can you maintain it if you develop it? It's a lot cheaper to maintain if it's simply land bank. Significantly. So those are all questions that come into play. All right, so if you have with you your... Well, they're messing around. If you have with you your PowerPoint presentation handout, you can go through that. This is plan B is always have paper copy. Do you have a problem
with that? I have extra of the PowerPoint. Did you get a packet?
Yeah, I got a packet.
This PowerPoint?
No, that's the text.
Yeah,
it's the very bottom.
Okay.
There you go.
Nice.
All right. I got it. We're all good.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay. So, you can skip the first page. That's just telling us it's today. So, the primary thing we're going to try to cover today is the discussion of level of service without any conclusions until you've got a fuller group to really, say, hey, we have a certain leaning towards policy or a change in standards or whatever that might be. So that second page, classification standards, level of service, that just takes you through what these things mean, what these terms mean. That's the one with the blue bars on it, in page two. So we have park classifications, we have neighborhood park, community park, regional park. Those all have adopted standards. Yeah. And we get music.
I'm sorry, I had a lot of wind damage last night.
Okay.
Because I'm waiting on the insurance card.
Oh, no.
Okay, so pick two.
I'm so glad you can make it.
There you go. There you go. Okay. All right. So all of you understand what the classifications are, I hope. We are actually in the special facility, but it has a neighborhood park in it, sort of mixed, spanning two little spaces. So it meets a requirement for a neighborhood park, but it's a special facility. So in the inventory, all of the land, all of the property, all of the infrastructure that parks had some classification. And if it has the classifications of neighborhood park, community park, or regional park, it has an associated standard. The other ones don't have standards. We don't have standards for trails or special facilities. We might have guidelines or targets, but not an adopted standard. And we don't have one for natural areas. And usually the natural areas, the acquisition of natural areas, is hinged upon natural features, environmental characteristics, you know, riparian areas, endangered species, that sort of thing. And the key reason for this is that that whole classification that then sets up those standards is used in PIP, in our park impact fee. In order to charge a fee, you have to prove that you need that fee as population grows and as that impact occurs. So there's a tie-in with our ability to get funding to support a park system as it grows and as the population grows with the standards. Okay, so that's just keep that sort of in the back of mind. If we want money and you want the ability to charge that as residential properties are being developed, when those building permits go out and when the land development is being targeted, you've gotta have that nexus. Okay, it's got a link. So, next one. So the standards, they've been adopted for each park. They are the amount of parkland and the degree of areas that are developed. So we have an acquisition standard, which is saying how many acres of parkland should you have, pretty basic, and a development standard. How much of that parkland should be developed for public access and recreation? Okay. So those two standards have been there. Now, while the standards are separate, the ability for parks to use the money that's collected, because it's still charged based on acquisition development, I believe, even though it's put into the same pool for PIF fees. Okay, so they're tied in with the standards. So for community park, we'll see that in a minute. So the level of service, that's how we measure whether or not we're meeting our standards. What's our performance? Which is nice to have to be able to say, oh, we've got, you know, a full system, or geez, we've got this huge gap from what we're trying to get to, and where are we in all the different districts in terms of reaching that performance level. Okay? Any questions on that? It's kind of basic, but I have a tendency, even having worked in this area for a while, of mixing things up. So I'm reminding myself as well. Okay, so these are the actual quantified adopted standards, and these are the ones that are based on, that the PIF fee program is based on, and it's what you're trying to reach. Now, PIF doesn't work for, we don't have a regional park PIF. There is no park impact fee for regional parks. We have a standard that we're trying to reach, but there's no money behind it, and there's no there's no funding support behind it. It just come out of general fund or grants or trust land transfers or some other way we can be creative. So yes.
There's no way of, how do I say this, of adding all of those up in a particular area so that we can accomplish the regional park? In other words, all of the requirements put together so that it can be one regional center, whatever we want to call it at the time. Do you understand how that is?
You mean a combined say?
Yeah. Say combine, say in an area you've got a couple of neighborhood mm-hmm. parks, you've got a community park. Can we combine all of those to allow us to use funds for larger?
Well, yes and no. In the urban area, you can use your PIF collection and have a kind of hybrid park. So the classifications are guidelines. So PIF funds were used to build this.
Yes.
Because it provides the same services, even though technically this is not a neighborhood or community park.
But did it take away from, thank you. Not take away from, but did we use monies for smaller parks to create this, or did this come entirely separate funding?
So this was part of the bigger Greater Clark Parks, you know, MPD levy program, that development program.
And it was specified that it would be this many acres.
Not this facility specifically. It was specified that you're gonna get the 35 parks and this many new sports fields.
I see.
And this many miles of new trail along.
And the funding came through that.
Funding all came through. Yes.
And so the plan specifically stated 30 neighborhood parks and 5 community.
Right.
Yeah.
Now how do we get in out of that area? Go away from there. How do we get regional parks in the north part of the county? So we don't have funding for that.
So there are two ways right now that and there could be more. One is a trust land transfer. So Department of Natural Resources in the state holds these lands that help support, but they're supposed to be logged, and the logging, you know, logging's not really profitable right now, but you know, the timber harvest would help to pay for education in the state of Washington.
Right.
Well, we all know the state of Washington has some issues budget-wise with education. When those lands are no longer valuable for timber harvest, the state then says, maybe we can offload those and transfer them to some other local entity or some other state entity that might want the land for some other purpose. So we got 80 acres in Woodland as a trust land transfer. And the only cost was basically a staff cost to do the transfer and the fees of transferring the land. So that's 80 acres free. Although, as soon as you own the land, now you're responsible, you've got to maintain it. And it's under the general fund, which was already strained. Regional parks has had a number of cuts over the years. So you have to be a little careful with that. And then the others can't Bonneville. So the Army is going to transfer that huge thing when it gets cleaned up, and a significant portion of those acres will become a regional park.
But that still doesn't answer the question. Can I, in an area that doesn't have much going on right now, except that it has, we've planned to put in 2 community parks, 4 neighborhood parks, whatever quantity that is, can we combine those numbers to allow us to do a regional center? Do you understand what I'm saying?
So I would use a different term. Rather than, you wouldn't call it a regional park. You just say, this is a big community park. And within the community park, you could even say there's a neighborhood park component in it. So
you understand what I'm asking?
Yeah, community parks can have a lot of services and could include an indoor community facility with a pool and blah, blah, blah. And so community parks guideline is that it's 20 acres or more. A regional parks guideline is it's 50 acres to 100 acres or more.
Okay.
So, and the guidelines are they're just guidelines. They're not the standard.
So you have a 60-acre community park.
You could have a 60-acre community park. You could designate that this is a community park. It's serving these community functions. The difference is it in these urban areas? Because if you can use PIF dollars, it's got to be in the urban unincorporated area, the Vancouver's growth area. If it's outside of that, which actually technically Hawkinson is, and we got that through another DNR transfer, but the argument is it's right up against it, and it's serving the urban unincorporated area. You probably couldn't do that in a rural area because you wouldn't have the money to buy it. You wouldn't have any PIF funds. You wouldn't have the levy to support the maintenance. So it'd be really difficult unless you had some, you know, magic deep pocket there.
So the secret is we have to have the population in the area before we can do practically anything, right?
Pretty much. And the other piece to this is that park impact fees are collected as houses are being built.
Yeah.
So you're starting to get dribs, drabs, a little bit, and you're accumulating the money. And you have a 10-year period in which you have to spend it, but you have to accumulate enough to then buy something. Well, if properties are being bought everywhere and homes are being built, you're behind the eight ball. And so that's a little bit of the challenge is, you know, can you catch up? And there was a significant period in 2008, 2009, well, actually mostly 2010, when, real estate markets are down, we can buy a bunch, bank it, hold on to it.
And we did.
And we did, yes.
So the Hawkinson area, it's not part of the PIF fund?
So there's a line, and actually you have...
Yeah, I looked at the map. So you're not on that map, you're outside of the PIF fund. Is that what that is?
If you're outside of these PIF lines, then yes. Well, you're also... You see where the blue is on this one? And we'll review this map a little bit. The blue is the levy area. If you're outside the blue, you're not paying for the parks you might be using that are inside the PIF area.
Okay.
So that's the other piece, is that the PIF borders move with annexation. Anytime the county or the city expands their growth area or annexes or makes the growth area bigger, the MPD, the Greater Clark Parks District, was established. Its boundaries were established by vote. Those boundaries cannot change unless you vote again.
So I thought we made that adjustable. We didn't?
It's not adjustable. It has to be by vote.
Correct.
Oh, I thought at the time that it moved with the urban growth. Mm-hmm. I told lies then.
Yes, so that's another variable when you're trying to think, do we bank money like up in District 10? Do we bank parks? But do you want to bank them outside the blue? Because you can't spend any money on it.
I guess that was my question.
Mm-hmm.
I see great areas for regional that are still without parks.
Right.
But there's no money to acquire that
right.
land.
So in the PIF fund, in the PIF boundaries, you can acquire and you can develop with those PIF dollars, but you cannot maintain.
Okay.
So that's the challenge. PIF is a bigger boundary than the levy, the maintenance levy is.
So in other words, if I wanted to take the PIF funds from number 10 that hasn't been spent, and buy a large chunk of land in this area.
No,
you can't do that by law.
No.
Money has to be spent where it was collected.
If it's right on a border, and you can make the argument that this is a mega center and it serves everybody, also for Hawkinson and for Pacific, they serve more than one PIF district. And so those adjacent districts, their money contributed to their acquisition and development.
Okay.
Well, primarily their development. But you really have to have a pretty strong direct tie.
Yeah.
So forgive me for my.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
No, this is a learning time, Adam.
Is there a way to create a District 11?
So outside of your growth area.
So if you just wanted to create a new.
Arbitrarily, no, because park impact fees are in urban growth areas. So you'd have to expand your urban growth area, and then the PIF districts will expand automatically with it.
Where's the PIF money for the houses that have been built in this area?
There isn't any.
So it's not collected.
They're not urban, they're rural. And we don't collect anything for rural services.
And that's what happens.
Trust me, we don't get any of that. We'll pay for them, but we don't get them.
Okay.
So there's a lot of layers.
Trust me.
John.
And I apologize. I'm not sure if I've already been answered.
No.
When counting acreage, do you include ball fields?
It scares me.
Such as this.
In the tech memo, just to make sure that it's clear, in the tech memo, we've also listed what is the inventory. Okay, and so some of the nuances was when you split from the city, there were some nuances of, why are we counting that as developed acres? It's not really developed, that doesn't seem fair, it's tilting our inventory. So the level of service to date and represented in the tech memo is based on the inventory that you see in the beginning of that tech memo.
Okay.
So if the ball field, let's say for example, there's a ball field at Philida, well, it's a soccer field, ball field at Philida. Philida is just counted as a community park. So the ball field is part of that overall acreage. This, however, is a special facility. And as a special facility, we don't have a level of service standard.
Right.
So the acreage is not arbitrary, it just is what it is. And since we don't have a level of service, we don't really have a way of measuring to say, we have way more ball fields than we need, or we don't have enough, which is going to be a little bit of our next challenge. You're going to start meeting on that next week. So, when do you say enough is enough, and what makes enough for the sports fields and the infrastructure you're providing for that type of program, recreation? In this case, where we're standing, there was money moved from one piece of property that was supposed to be a park, a neighborhood park, was shifted to pay for a portion of this property that was designated as a neighborhood park, and so its inventory counts. And that, so on, what district are we in?
So you are doing what I said. You're taking money from one district.
But only within the...
Only within the property.
Only within that urban area, and only when it's justified because of classification and that sort of thing. So there are some funky things that happen.
And do we bank money? For instance, we know that in the little blue thing here, at some point in time, this area is going to have to be covered. Okay. As houses are built, you're not collecting anything there.
No.
So
if you have no money, you've got nothing to spend.
So if you expand this district, how do we? I guess the next question is, how do we expand this district?
We would have to go for a vote to the public.
To the public.
So what we could do. Is potentially take it out to the taxpayers and say, do we want to expand our district to cover Clark County?
But does the vote come from all over Clark County or just from where?
So there's two different things. The urban growth boundary, this follows the urban growth boundary.
Yeah.
So an urban growth boundary to get bigger, that's part of the county's overall comprehensive plan process, you know, to justify, hey, this needs to get bigger. The Metropolitan Park District pays for maintenance. You don't really want the PIF boundaries to get too much bigger, even though you're collecting PIF, if your maintenance boundary
can't go.
So, you know, we've already got a little bit of a gap, and you don't want too much of a gap building. So
you said the blue on here.
That's where we have.
That's the maintenance.
That's the maintenance.
That's the maintenance.
Right. That's where you have M&O or O&M funding. Operations and maintenance funding.
We're throwing three different conversations.
Yeah.
It's kind of funny. So I'm still on definitions.
Okay.
It is part of our role to look at definitions. In other words, it could be an answer to say, you know, look, XYZ ball field, which is not currently considered a park, is providing recreation opportunity, just like a park. Let's call it a park.
Okay.
Is that part of our discussion?
It could be. You could consider how your classifications either need to be broader or more inclusive. It could also be a Pandora's box. Like, you open that one up, and now are you going to say that the Alki Middle School ball fields, that some money went to help make them more functional in an agreement with the school, should now count as a park when the average Joe cannot use those fields? All during the school year, during school days. If you count it as a park, in the past, the staff decision has been, and a practice decision has been, if it doesn't have full public access, we don't want to count it as a public park. Because the more things you're counting as public parks, the more you've met your standard, and the less you have justification for charging an impact fee as growth happens. You say, well, we already have everything we need, so we don't need to charge any more fees.
Yeah, and I think it distorts too, though. It's even beyond that. It's the fact that it distorts what you actually have.
Yeah. Well, then that's the challenge. And there's only a few cases. Once the county split from the city, there are only a few cases where the county is counting school-owned property as public park land because it is accessible, or accessible enough that there's an interlocal agreement and people can use it during the day. So I think there's only two properties, but the rest is like.
But we do not similarly count state-owned land as park availability.
So no, we don't.
Wouldn't that be nice?
But
well, actually, I think that's a good thing that we don't.
Oh,
because as
well, we don't have control. We can't go in and develop a park on it.
Yeah.
Which we don't really want to be. Exactly. Our goal is to.
Yeah. So far, all the state parks are outside of the urban area. So it's not going to affect your level of service relative to a PIF program collecting money. The other piece is that state parks all charge fees. And that you could interpret that as being, well, it's not full public access because you've got to pay money to go. That's, you know, a philosophical question. Our regional parks used to pay, you know, charge fees. So, but when we look at the regional park level of service, in the tech memo, I added at least the hypothetical of, if you want to count Fort Vancouver National Historic Site as being a regional park, you know, in the middle of the city. If you want to count Paradise Point State Park as a regional facility, then your level of service gap is much smaller. So,
but interestingly, even then, we're still not there.
You're still not
there. Yeah, but we're still not there.
Yeah, you're still not there.
Paradise Point State Park.
And second is, we can't do that because they charge fees.
Well, they charge.
Well, you can. You can say fees. Charging of fees is justified. But I mean, that's another question. And at the end of this, you'll want to ask that question. If you don't have enough to fund what you have, should you charge user fees that help buoy this?
I thought that question was already answered.
It has been answered. But I got to tell you, if you take the long view, every 10 years, the answer's going to change.
Yeah.
So, you know, it was in 97 that they started, and it was in 2012 or whenever that it ended. You know, it's cyclical.
Yeah.
A lot of things are cyclical.
Cyclical.
But so basically, right now, we're dealing with just the little areas that are white within those
zones.
Oh.
Is that correct?
No. Well, yeah.
You got me confused now, Kim.
No, but when you say we are dealing with...
In other words, to collect funds. To build anything.
Yes.
It has to be done within those little bits of white that we have left in the.
No.
We have need over here in the blue area too.
Anywhere inside those purple lines.
Yeah. All the blue is that's where your MPD is. The red lines.
So it's houses
are what we're interested in. Everything within it.
District 9, they still charge 50. They still pay 50. You know, houses that are built over up above Maplecrest area, they still
are okay. But what I guess I'm looking for, obviously, is I'm looking for a large chunk of land that a regional facility can be built. And the only place that can be done is if we fill in these white spaces with somebody paying fees. Right?
Because if it was, let's just say it was regional. Let's say it's going to serve this whole area.
Right.
You could say that 8, 9, and 10 PIF fees are all going to go to this facility that's built right near the interchange. And you're going to draw tons of people from outside the region and you're going to charge them for membership or something.
Got it. Yeah.
You know, yeah, you could do that.
We raise fees for those that live in the city. Oh, he's gone.
Yeah.
Darn it.
Oh, yeah.
or if you built a park out here, you'd have to get a commitment for maintenance. See, that's all that is.
Yeah.
Quiet areas.
They're
to build it, but they have no maintenance in the white areas,
gotcha.
Marcia.
Okay.
And the other thing strategically to think of is if you have, let's say, in Barbara's neighborhood, there's two options to buy a new park or to buy some new land that would eventually be a park.
We
and
wish.
One's in the blue and one's in the white. You're going to probably vote for the blue because you could maintain it.
Yeah.
You'd have to find it somewhere.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's what it is.
Do you have a magic wand? Did you find a piece of land out there?
Find me a big one.
Did you grow some land for it?
A couple of years ago, I had one.
I know you did.
But, sorry, it didn't go.
Oh, well.
Okay. Yeah, okay. So
I need to put my ideas on hold.
No,
you get creative, Marcia. We get creative.
I'm trying.
Okay.
That's
trying
what
to get
it
all
means.
The ammunition so I can get creative.
All right, so... Yeah, Jeremy always jumps in. So you understand that there are these standards. There's the acquisition standard, it's for land.
Mm-hmm.
And then the development standard is actually like buildable. Okay? So those are two sets. And they're combined in every one of these, not 10, but in our case, 5, 6 districts. Okay, so level of service then is measuring where are you? If you set a standard as a public agency, you need to report back to people of how you're doing. So level of service is basically how are you performing? You know, is it A, B, C, D? And it's not really grades, but it is translated as percent. So in the case of overall in the urban area, the way we measure this is you've got to look at the population. And so there's a population listing in your tech memo. Let's see, what page is that? Okay, so on page 7 is a list of what your population is, and each of the charts that are before that, they're after that, basically tell you that in districts 5 through 10, here's your current population, so here's how many parks you should have. Here's how much land you should have.
And which one? I'm on the wrong one.
Okay, so table 10 tells you what our populations are. And the bold on table 10 is the part we're talking about. So in District 5, they've broken that out between what's in the city of Vancouver, because that's a shared district. So District 5 is shared. There's 32,000 in the city, but then in the part that's the unincorporated area that Bill takes care of, there's 33,157 people. Oh, that's 2020. I'm sorry. I'm reading the projection. Let's start. I've got to take you to the beginning. Page 5. Table 6. That's easy. So, jumping ahead of myself. Current level of service for neighborhood parks. You use a population. Let me go back. We use the population, and it's 2 acres per thousand. So what this is telling us is, and now I have the other set of charts. Right, hold on, let me go to, this is the total summary that I have up here. I think I gave you a good example on, I think District 6 is going to work better.
Where?
So hold on. If I take it as one by one, I don't want to get confused.
Was page 8 in the PowerPoint?
Yeah,
District 6.
The example? Yeah. Let's go to page 8 on that, if you would, Jim. And then we'll come back. Okay, so I'll take you through this so you can understand at least why and how this is set up. This was one example. So in District 6, we've got 20,000 people currently. And we know what the standard is. For both, acres needed to meet acquisition standards. So your acquisition standard was 5 acres per thousand. I hope I'm remembering this right. So it was 2 acres for a neighborhood park and 3 acres for community park. Under those standards, that's 5 acres per thousand. So if I do 5 acres per thousand times 20,000, we should have, if we're meeting our standard, we should have 124 acres. Currently we have 104 acres.
Okay.
That's what's in the end.
And that's in your PIF district, isn't it, Marcia?
This is just on the power, I think. It's not in the 10 map. I wanted to go through one whole district.
Are you
just to give you a sense of the summer.
My fear with mine is I'll be included in the city before long.
So in your tech memo that broken out by every single district and level of service, this gives you a sense of how do you get to the level of service number? How do we figure out what this number is? Where we are now. So you have population, and then you have what are you supposed to have for that population? What do you actually have? And what's the gap? So you've got the population. Your standard basically says this is what our demand is. So the demand for parks that we're measuring because we have an adopted standard, the demand for parks is 124 acres of parks in PIF District 6.
Now, how do we define that when the national... Why is our need different than the national standard, I guess is the question. Because I know the national standard is a little higher than this.
It's what was decided by a body similar to yours and by a public outreach process decades ago.
Okay. And so even though national standard is say 140, we decided we only need 124 here?
Right. So, well, you didn't decide that you needed 124. You decided you needed the 2 acres per thousand or the 3 acres per thousand.
Well, I know, and I'm just trying to remember, as I recall, national standards are actually a little bit higher than that.
They can. But I will tell you this also. So these national standards that were kind of adopted by many agencies across the country because they were published by the National Recreation Park Association, the National Recreation Park Association, NRPA, no longer touts those standards.
Oh, they don't?
Because they're strictly quantitative. They basically said, let's look at everybody's systems, let's put it together, let's try to establish some guidelines and averages, and then let's try to suggest to everybody that they should be unique to their community and respond to their community rather than try to meet a established standard.
Yeah.
Because there are suburban communities, there are urban communities, there are rural communities, and this, you know, one size fits all doesn't fit all.
Right. Who makes the change? I get that. I guess the thought there is just that it costs so much to do that analysis locally
that the national standard, I kind of looked at that and thought they, federal people, put a lot of money into analyzing need, and that's why I had a question why our need was less.
I think,
but I
get
that.
It's more a question of an advisory board and public input, and park planners at the time looked at all this and said, there's no way we can ever reach this goal.
It's unattainable.
It's too high. We cannot afford this goal,
okay.
And if we try to get this goal, this utopia, no one's going to vote for it or support it because it's too high.
So why do we put that? Why do we put that out as our in the general plan that we're trying to supposedly work on and all this good stuff?
Mm-hmm.
Can we change that standard at that time and recommend that, say, it's, I'll use a ridiculous figure, 4 acres per thousand or something.
One of the reasons for going through this assessment is for you all to deliberate, are these standards appropriate? Should they be where they are? What's the reasonable extent to which we can ever meet this standard? And do we someday want to change that standard? And it could be today, or not today, but it could be that during this comprehensive plan process, you all decide collectively, you know what? 6 acres per thousand of urban parks in the urban unincorporated area is way too much, we'll never reach it. Let's drop it. If you drop it, you then are going to have a corresponding drop in your PIF collection.
Right.
You're not going to have the money to get even the gap you have now.
Yeah.
So the nuance is you can deliberate about, boy, standards can be so hard to meet for a while, but maybe that's good until you get really close to building out your whole system, and then you say, you know, we're never going to meet that standard because we ran out of land and we're built out. And we have enough parks, and there's no point. And you don't have the justification to charge the fees anymore. Because the fees are not for operations and maintenance. So once you
require them, Wait a minute. Didn't they change that so they could be used for operations and maintenance?
No, PIF cannot be used for operations and maintenance.
They should be combined acquisition and development in PIF.
Okay. Yeah.
But what you're proposing there, and I'm just in a little bit different place, because I'm more of a facts and data type person. And that's why I looked at the standards and such and the numbers that were done by analysis and not on what's in your pocketbook. I always think if you don't have money, you don't spend it, period.
That's all I do.
But do you change your reality or your goal because it's not attainable? The kid that struggles with spelling, well, okay, instead of having 15 words, you only have to do 5. Is that really good to attain 5 words you can spell?
But the problem is if you don't have
it
out there, you're never going to meet it. So whatever that number is, that's what we should work towards, because is what happens is when you start lowering your standard, your money's going to start being lower.
Exactly. That's my point.
Yeah.
We don't lower standards because they're not attainable.
Right.
What's the reality? What do we really need to meet the people's
right
that live here?
I think, wouldn't it be, just a thought experiment, if we lived in a very, very wealthy, county, then there could probably be some argument for increasing the standard, if you will. Then, there'd be more money to come in. But we live in an agricultural community, county, right? So
I think that's changing.
I don't see that at all. I just drove a tractor. So I think that argument is good. Yeah, we could be here, but we need the draw to bring those, to bring the higher, higher income, more lucrative building services into this area, rather than throwing something out which would reduce the fund. So we basically could be a big fish in a small pond, or a small fish in a big pond, right? And so, yeah.
And along those lines, Adam, you're right there, because if you have great need, even if you don't have the rich people there, you're eligible for grants because the need is not fulfilled. Whereas if you drop your standards so that you've met, then you don't have the need defined, so you lose out on a lot of grant dollars too.
So then we're much better off.
Oh, I'm sorry. We can't. I don't know. Maybe I see it a little different. We shouldn't base our growth on money we don't have, as opposed to saying, hey, we because there's no while you, the idea of grants is a great thing to accomplish what you want, advocacy should be like the primary, fundamentally.
It should be need driven.
But then I find myself in a situation where, if that's the case, building apartment buildings all around me and houses that are built like this, and I'm promoting that kind of development, which maybe I don't want in the county. So I'm caught between a rock and a hard place, because the more units you get, the more money you get, right? So our influence on those decisions is, we're saying to the commissioners or whoever that makes the decision about how many units, we're saying to them, hey, build as many as you possibly can, because we need those PIF dollars to be able to put parks in. And that breaks my heart. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes.
So where do we impact that kind of decision? I mean,
that would be much more of
but how do these
growth management and, you know, comprehensive plan and zoning, you know, density, urban density. As soon as you say this is in the urban area, that density goes up 4 to 10-fold.
But we are controlling. They don't see all of this. They see what we say. We say, okay, 3 units per 1,000 or 4 units per 1,000 or 1. And if we say 1, you know, does that impact that decision as to how many units in an area, for instance?
No, because it's not units. So ours is acres per 1,000. So what we're basically saying is, the more density you're putting in, the more PISPs we'll collect, and the more opportunity we'll have for a lung or a valve, pressure release valve, in that dense community to be a part. And from a county perspective, and this is based on some past land use planning that I've had in my life, from an overall county economic perspective, it's a lot less money from county coffers across all the agencies, schools included, to maintain an acre of park space than it is to maintain an acre of residential property. Because for every dollar you get, this is what it was in Pennsylvania anyway, I don't know what the exact numbers are here, but for every dollar you get in tax contributions, tax revenue for a residential property, you're paying, as a public service across all these different services, about $1.40 in public safety, schools, roads, etc. So from a cost perspective, it's a lot less money actually for a county to have significant areas of open space and parkland. Now, maybe not a Luke Jensen, because that's the highest level of maintenance.
Something different, yeah.
Yeah, and that probably well exceeds it. But from a philosophical perspective, land banking these pieces of open space across the county isn't really affecting your revenues for residential property, because as soon as you land bank it, it's not paying taxes anymore.
Yeah.
But you know, there's that other part of the equation of it's going to cost you less long term. So there's a lot of.
I just want to be sure I'm not giving that we're not giving them.
No, this doesn't.
The wrong
this
picture.
Doesn't.
You know what I'm saying?
It doesn't really encourage density at all. It's really a response to density that's already been decided.
Okay. So we're on the other end of the picture.
We're in a reactive mode because of.
Yeah, but you know, based on the way the funding comes in, we're reactive. No. However, your parks comp plan is proactive, because it's saying we value this, we want people to have this within walking distance, you know, we're chasing it, you know, we're behind the eight ball because we don't have the funding support, but we still think it's an important piece to the overall community value.
So should our goal be just more what we feel the need should be, and not try to match the dollars up with the need, so to speak?
Well, so when we get to the capital facilities plan, we're going to be looking at, boy, if we want to reach this goal by, you know, 6 years or by 20 years, because those are the two capital facilities plans, and we want to reach a certain goal, and here's our identified funding. Holy crap, you know, we have $55 million worth of improvements we're proposing, and we have $14 million in money.
Yeah.
So, okay, we're not going to reach that. So then the question is, do you go after other money? Do you change? Do you go to the commissioners and say, look, for our community to be healthy and to promote new influxes of corporations to come in with young technical people that are, you know, are much more urban-oriented, so that we can have this healthy system of parks, trails, and open space, we need to have a healthy system of parks, trails, and open space to encourage them to come, to entice them. Because that's one of the top three that a lot of these corporations are looking at, quality of life issues. So, but realistically, you know, we have this goal with a standard, and when we come to the capital facilities plan, we're probably not going to go for the gold-plated utopian, we want everything in 6 years. We might have to say, well, realistically, we're going to keep biting off chunks because our utopia is out here, and we're going to try to keep making progress to it. So this whole level of service thing is measuring, here we are now, here's the gap, and our next step will be, you know, incrementally, how do we continue with that gap? So
then looking at this table 12,
okay.
What you're telling me is, basically, we are falling short by how much?
Okay, so on table 12, you're looking at the 2020 and the 2035. Okay.
Right.
So, the first column.
But this is only with the current blue stuff, or blue
metrics.
Right?
Well, no, this is the projection.
For this area.
For your current 6 PIF districts. That's like as population grows.
And that's projection is
you're always going to have a moving target.
Right, well, that's based on the current. That's based on population, right?
It's based on estimated projected population.
Right, estimated projected population based on the park system that you have.
Yes, current inventory. Current inventory. If we stick with our current inventory, our gap is going to be bigger.
Sure.
In 2020, and then it'll be even bigger in 2035.
But you're never constant.
Right? No, because hopefully you're making some strides to adding more developed parks, right. And you're adding more park land.
Right. So it's not something. It's not a fearful thing.
No, not an attainable goal. But my question was: are these goals only in this area?
In the five districts,
yes.
The six districts, yes.
So you're not making any provisions or plans. For areas that are outside these districts?
No.
When do we do that? When do we put on paper and say, hey, you know, we should do this? In other words, how do we improve those goals?
It does happen. One example is we acquired some property in Daybreak, you know, 100 acres of property.
Right.
Taking a look at seeking grants to see if we can develop those acreage into a regional facility. So that does happen, but it has nothing to do with PIF.
Right.
So we are seeking grant funds, we're seeking other types of funds to make that happen.
But I think Marcia's comment is that when we get to goal setting, mm-hmm. we need goals both inside and outside of the districts.
Absolutely.
Okay, so you want to distinguish inside the districts is a defined urban growth
that
area.
That exists today.
And it exists today. It's a defined urban growth area. If those districts get bigger and they go out further, the PIF program will go with them. The blue doesn't go with them, but the white, you know, gets inside. The purple lines get bigger. So you have an urban system, and that's your neighborhood and the community parks and your urban natural areas. Then you have a regional system. And the regional system, which Bill was referring to, of Daybreak being expanded, the Woodland campground area from DNR, eventually Camp Bonneville getting cleaned up enough. So that grows and gets chipped away at as opportunities knock.
And the funds come from the general funds for those?
Depends. It was regional.
The biggest fund making those work, yes. The regional funds for those sites.
Yeah, but development money is not there.
And that's where those grant funds are so critical.
Yeah. So there is regional REIT or real estate excise tax. So in the region, you know, across the entire, pretty much the entire county, if you had a lot of real estate growth everywhere, you'd have some money there. If it weren't, is it all allocated towards paying off debt right now?
Yeah, debt service.
Not for parks, but you know, buildings and
infrastructure.
So there are funding mechanisms out there, but when the economy kind of barreled down and crashed, basically parks is the last one on the totem pole, it goes to other purposes.
But we have acquired land that's not in this area.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
And so are you looking at projections including that?
I'm sorry, this is my breakfast, so you have to forgive me.
I mean, are you... I guess it's the same question he asked. Are we going to see in the plan that goes to the whole plan?
We
are
do,
we going to see
have
this
service
and
for regional facilities
mm-hmm.
as well,
yeah.
and that's,
yeah.
that's part of it. So
it
yes.
will all be there.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So there and there are always opportunities along things like the East Fork of the Willis River.
Yeah.
There's a lot of conserved land. There's partnerships that Parks has with the Columbia Land Trust, with different fish groups, conservation groups. So whenever there's opportunities to go get grants, to purchase more, and there are also some very philanthropic people who are conservation oriented who say, I'm going to deed this land to
well, so, the parks organization.
Yeah. I mean, there's, I hope it's, we really have to look up that one, Swanson. You didn't.
The Swanson, Elizabeth Swanson.
Yeah.
We did look it up. We haven't talked to that person yet.
Yeah, well, don't talk to her. Don't, but see if you can do a title title search.
Right.
Make sure it's
still
important. So there are, I'm referring to a piece of ground that's within the six districts where an elderly woman said, I want this to be maintained undeveloped, and when I die, I'm giving it to Parks.
And I love the fact that she doesn't want it developed.
Yeah, so.
if there may be trees there.
There may be trees there.
Yeah.
Exactly.
You know, it's old farmland, and you know, it would be a wonderful natural habitat, et cetera, et cetera. So there are situations like that.
Yeah.
And certainly you want to have that opportunity. But in order to justify that, when you go before the commissioners and say, we really need this, please accept it, you've got to have, you want to be able to show them, there's a gap in our system. We want to do it. So there's a lot of nuances to all that. But yeah, the opportunities.
I guess my problem is that you're showing a deficit here.
Yes.
The land that we need.
Yeah.
But now.
No.
So let's go to the next slide.
No. 2035.
Okay. So for now, this will help you a little. For now, across all six districts. Mm-hmm. Now, let me also explain. On the shared districts, I love pointers. I'll try to turn that. On the shared districts, we're only counting the population in that district that's urban unincorporated area, not the city. And we're only counting the park inventory that's county controlled in that area. Okay? Because we want to make sure it's apples to apples across the board.
Yeah.
Okay, so 5 and 7 are kind of funky because they're shared districts. But we're measuring it by our portion of the shared district only. Yes, Adam?
That is a little bit deceiving because there's regional parks, there's state parks. Shouldn't that be into the equation as well?
Well, none of the state parks are in the urban area.
Yeah.
So I don't have to mention that.
Right.
There are regional parks in the urban area.
Right.
And that really can discombobulate things like how much urban natural area you have or need.
Right.
Do you know on Salmon Creek?
Right.
So it distorts it a little.
Right. Because
okay.
that'd be... Because we're talking about need. If the people, individuals can go to a regional park, right, and get their need felt need met, right, then we don't need a
neighborhood.
We don't need to throw more money, you know, at you know, put a park right next to a beautiful regional park.
Right.
Right. So.
So in that case, you might measure how acceptable is it. What facilities is it providing?
Right.
Is there better? Like, say for example, Salmon Creek. If I live on the north side of Salmon Creek, I've got 3 miles before I can get down that creek, across the creek, and then go up and go to the regional park or the community park that's within that huge greenway. So if you could buy an acre of property on the north side that got you to be able to access and then build a bridge to access the trail and ball fields and the playground and climb line or whatever,
sure.
Then you could say, well, this is meeting a neighborhood need for these folks, but it's also providing access.
Right.
So you want to be able to synergize,
right? Maximize, all that.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah, I mean, that would be ideal.
So, and so I know we've gone way away from where you were initially started.
Okay.
But the so again, forgive me for my patience. I don't know. I'm not familiar with it. Is it possible to work the park system, county park system, to one, lease property from the Department of Transportation. I don't even know if that's or other entities like it to basically because there's huge portions of land, for instance, the 219, which is now Highway 502 or whatever in their battleground, they purchase huge plots of land, right, that are set away for
you know, birds or whatever. You know, if you had bridge paths, you know, that kind of go over the big slough, not slough, but
wetland.
A bog is really a huge bog area, and then where you partnered with them to create something. Mm-hmm. I mean, is that even a possibility, or has that been done in the past?
It's possible. Yes. I mean, unless it's specific to keeping it in a natural area. I mean, if we could look at opportunities to try to put a trail around it or a trail through it, you know, to provide additional connectivity. So if anything's possible, we're working with other jurisdictions. It depends on what the land use is.
Okay. So.
Well, is the area he's referring to, is that a mitigation area?
Well, there again, that's a land use issue. I mean, if it is strictly a litigation area or it's used for drainage for the 219th Street improvement,
right.
We may not be able to have accessibility to that, but we can always pose the question.
Yeah, I'm just curious where it's not actually purchasing, but you're leveraging relationships, right, in order to accomplish.
Cool. So that's done with the school districts already. There are a lot of adjacent lands that are owned by the county or that are fully owned by the school districts. Where their serving park functions, and you could use maybe Eisenhower as sort of an example. There are a bunch of examples out there where parks had land adjacent to it, and then when it came time to develop that park, they might have developed the amenities that would provide a neighborhood park in a different part on the school property. Or I'm thinking of like Four Seasons, which is in the city, where the neighborhood park is immediately adjacent to the school property, and it provides basically a ball field, play area, a little skate spot, but it's fenced separately from the school,
right,
so that the public has access to it 24/7. Well, not 24/7, because it's not at night, but the school has access to it anytime as well. So there are a lot of those kinds of
relationships.
And
that wouldn't be accounted for on this kind of.
Oh, the park, the,
oh, yeah.
Yes.
Oh,
okay. Oh, that would be a neighborhood park, and it's the 2.5 acres of that neighborhood park, and
but,
it counts.
But not including...
It wouldn't count the schools.
The school.
No, it wouldn't count the schools, because we don't have public access to the schools.
It does include trails, correct? These numbers?
No.
Why not?
No, because we don't have a standard for trails.
Oh, and maybe that's something we need to do.
You'd make Kelly very happy if you...
That's, but how would you measure it? I think that's the big thing.
How do we do that, you mean?
Yeah.
So the next level after doing the level of service for parks is to look at, because this is basically saying, here's the demand for parks based on your standard, here's the need, so that's the gap. The next level of assessment that we're looking at are the sports fields and the trails. What's the demand? And how do you measure demand? Because we don't have a standard. So what do we think is the demand? And there are a lot of different ways, a lot of public outreach will probably happen as part of that.
Yeah.
Here's our existing inventory. Here's what the national, former historic national standard used to be. I think it was 1 mile per 1,000 or 2,000 or something like that. Where are we in that, you know, what would be our hypothetical gap? And should we adopt a standard, trail standard? And that's the kind of question that would be good for you as representatives of the public to think of, well, how do we engage people in this question, or do we just want to determine what that's going to be? What do we base it on? And so that would be, we'll be teeing that up.
And where does the money come from to provide and maintain those trails?
There's no trail impact fee.
Yeah,
some communities have trail impact fees. They have trail licensing fees.
You're back to your donations and grants and like that. And then open space is separate. Do we have an objective on that, on the open space?
Yeah, we have an urban area. We have an objective. And that's 1 acre per 1,000.
Okay.
In that urban area, and we've met it across the whole system, but not in each individual district, because some are way over and some are under. We don't have a countywide standard for natural areas.
So, like, where we bought additional parkland, because it was the wetland, that wetland portion, does that get stroked in
that's
the category for the open space?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, because I was going to say, we really don't get to play much in that.
No, it's, and that does not count as the neighborhood park. Your neighborhood park of Chinook, I think, is 2.2.
Okay, is that how it was?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So does the county own any land in this white?
Yeah. Whipple Creek Park, Hawkinson Park is over. Hawkinson's over here.
Yeah.
And Whipple Creek is over here.
And so you're accounting for all of that.
Yeah. Whipple Creek is partially in 10, though.
We're accounting for growth within just the PIT districts in those numbers.
But so the county owns this land already up here.
Right, it does. So there's a Whipple Creek is a regional park.
It's a regional park, yes.
But we're not making any provisions in our recommendation for funding, say, for future use of these areas. Basically, you're saying when this plan goes forward, we really only want to count for these areas.
No. What we're saying is, here's what we have, here's what we're counting. If we should be doing other things, then that's something that we will come forward in the recommendation.
But right now, revenue is being generated in the blue.
Right.
Or, sorry, that's the maintenance.
Yeah.
The revenue is being generated within the purple. The actual revenue is being...
And as that UGA gets pushed out, then the PIP applies and it will automatically be addressed.
I guess I'm more concerned about the purchasing of land that's already going on in those areas.
In which areas?
In the white areas.
Oh, in the white. Well, so Whipple Creek is pretty historic. When did Whipple Creek
That's been ours for a long time. The old mill and
a couple decades, I think.
Everything
and the other
there.
Piece that's outside, the only other piece that's outside besides Camp Bonneville, where I think it is Hawkinson, and that does count for this, even though it's on the other
was
side.
Was that
of
a donation way back when?
It's like Gene said, you know, there's opportunities where the state wants to turn property over to the Department of Natural Resources, and recently we have acquired, Rapid Canyon Park is 80 acres. We very recently acquired Green Mountain Park, so that's the whole eastern half of Green Mountain. That was deeded over to us from DNR. So we are actually collecting regional lands.
Without the expenditure.
Without the expenditure, yes. But we're all, you know, there's always looking at potential sites, you know, in rural areas, but we also have to find the funding to purchase it. So,
and the funding to maintain it.
Exactly. And then once we acquire the property, then we're tasked with maintaining it with no additional maintenance funds. And so we're trying to be creative as possible when we do receive properties like this. And, you know, one example of Red Canyon, you can't post there, stand there, and open and close the gates for free. You know, so it's really great little cost to us. And then we have volunteers that are helping us to maintain the site. But once we take possession of a large regional facility, we have to maintain it. You know, at least for noxious weed purposes and put signs up, you know.
But isn't a lot of Whipple Creek done by that little 4-H equestrian group?
Whipple Creek?
The Whipple Creek. Doesn't it have a big equestrian?
Yeah, we've got about 4 miles of trails out there, yes.
They do a lot of volunteer work out there.
Absolutely. We've got a gigantic volunteer group out there. They're rebuilding the trails, essentially.
Yeah.
That's wonderful.
So even though it's a regional facility and doesn't have any dollars, it's got commitment. Yeah. It's got community commitment.
This has been great for me.
Good. The whole point of this is to try to get everybody up to speed on all the stuff.
So it has helped me to understand a lot better.
It's okay.
All right, I guess my biggest concern has been for these areas outside of the blue line.
Okay. Yeah. All right.
Now I understand what's happening.
Okay. So let me get us back inside the PIP areas.
Yeah.
Just to cover a couple main things.
So how do the maintenance, the levy areas, how are those determined? Why don't those follow that urban growth line?
Because they were established by vote.
By vote.
When that went to vote, and I'm sure we're going on it, but whatever. This is how much I paid attention. Were those lines, just those were lines were defined when it went on the ballot, or they were defined?
They were what the PIP district boundaries were
in
2005 when it went to a vote, and that's what defined it was. This is your urban unincorporated area, exclusive of the city of Vancouver. At the time it was voted on, and so the boundaries are determined, they're surveyed, they are set. Now, since then, the city has annexed. So if you look at that blue, some of that blue looks a little green because the city's grown.
Yeah.
And so any facilities that are that could be transferred or that move, then you've got to transfer the funding with it. And so far, I don't think you've had that.
Transfer funding?
Transfer. As the city grew, we haven't lost any parks yet, have we?
No.
Yeah, so it hasn't happened yet, but there would be a process for it. if the city annexed a county park, you could transfer it, and you could then transfer the allocated money.
How it works, with the 35 parks that were named in the original levy, if the city were to annex into that area where we do have a park, we would turn that park over to the city and provide them the money to maintain it. Any other parks, like we talked about Schaefer Park, that has to be negotiated. We can either hang on to it, or we can sell it to the city, or give it to them, but we do not have to provide the maintenance money.
So,
the interesting matter is in 2005, when they voted on the maintenance levy, this blue line was the urban growth grant.
That was it.
Okay, so the way to think of it,
districts.
So it's been pushed out, but the maintenance did not go in.
The way to think of it is, in 2005, only those people in the blue areas voted.
Right.
So you can't charge people a maintenance fee if they haven't voted to accept it. That's what's going on.
So in order to make the
GCP,
the Metropolitan District, meet your PIP boundaries, you'd have to go to another vote.
Yeah, I honestly did.
At some point,
that's going to have to happen.
It would make sense. Yeah, because if you're outside the blue, but you're right next door to a neighborhood park that everybody else is paying for, you can still use it. So, that eventually that will sort of get triggered. So I do want to just go through a quick summary of, we measure the demand based on what the standard says we should have in acreage and in developed. And then the gap between what we have and what we said we wanted is that need. And it gets kind of shocking. So, and it seems totally unrealistic that you're going to manage to meet the need, but we need to just know it's out there so each of you, if you're ever questioned, can be able to respond, yes, that's the ideal, and someday we may want to modify it a little, but we still want to, really towards an ideal. Or you have to decide what you want to say. So in the neighborhood parks, we measured the need based on current population in each of those districts. And you can put a comma here, but for my Excel calculations, I need to put the dot because it's per thousand. So we measured what the demand would be. We should have 62 acres. We don't. And we're short by 13 acres. That's just an example in District 5. Okay, so the minus means, we're short. If we go all the way down across all those districts, we don't have 2 acres per thousand of neighborhood parks in the whole urban unincorporated area. And in order to get there, we need 92 more acres, across the whole urban area.
Is there 92 acres even possible in that area?
Well, that's very
pretty dense.
That's a very question.
Construction in that area.
Could be very dense. Now, here's another thing. So there's a whole lot of nuances to this. One is your classification for a neighborhood park is from 2 to 5 acres. Right? That's the general neighborhood park size could be 2 to 5 acres. Your standard just says 2 acres per thousand. If you got 5 acres, well, you would serve that many more. Theoretically, you would serve that much more of your standard. But parks come in all shapes and sizes. And in reality, they aren't always within 2 to 5 acres. So you could have a really nice park that's only an acre and a half, but it's dense. It's got a lot of stuff in it. And maybe it doesn't have enough room for a ball field or something, or even a huge open grass area to throw around in. But it serves a park, it might have a loop trail, it might connect to natural areas, it might do lots of other stuff. So realistically, you're probably not going to get 20 or 92 more acres of neighborhood parks across the urban area.
Yeah.
But it's your gap, it's the need that quantitatively has set up the justification for the PIF funds, for charging an impact. Okay. So we do that with neighborhood parks, we do it with community parks, we do it with urban natural areas to justify the allocation and expenditure of these PIF funds.
But the problem is, if there's not 92 acres there, anywhere in that area, I've collected all the PIF funds for that area. I don't have any place to put a park. What happens then?
So,
like, I'm looking at this next little thing, this figure 2, page 10. I look at those blue and I say, that ain't bad. That's pretty good coverage if you look at it that way. So where am I going to get 90 acres or 92 acres or whatever it is when I've collected PIF funds for this area? Well, you understand what I'm saying?
If you break it down to like what you said, like District 5, we're looking at 13 acres within that PIF district itself. It's probably not too hard to achieve, and that's provided we have the funding for it, and because we are competing with infill, that's where the, you know, we're trying, the yeah. county wants everybody to infill on the existing urban interpretive area, and so we're going to be paying an elevated price. Okay. On the other end of the scale, with PIP funds, we have a thing called concurrency. I think we talked about this sometime earlier, which means from the time that we collect PIP fees, we've got 10 years to spend those PIP fees, or we lose those fees. So we're driven to make sure that we try to spend those funds to tie up some property before that money has to be refunded back to the homeowners.
Yeah.
So,
has that ever been done?
No.
What, concurrency?
Yeah.
District 4 this year.
And you gave money back in District 4?
District 4 had a refund, I believe, the $450,000. And that was distributed out to all, it's not the developers that gave us the money, it's the homeowners that reside at each one of those houses.
They actually got money?
Yes.
Holy cow.
They probably would have preferred a park.
Yeah.
And that was a very cumbersome project to do. If you look at the calculation on collecting this,
a park is
you reverse that to give it back to them.
Barbara, as a co-chair, can you take a comment from or a question from the audience?
You can.
I
think it's probably important to understand that the PIP fees for each district have to stay in that district. So you can't have the 90-acre park serving all the districts. That money has to stay in each district.
Well, unless you can say that this 90-acre
park
is one of the residents of multiple districts.
For instance,
so and in that case, then you can't.
We could have found land or
There were a bunch of
not
sale negotiations, but potential sales that would get pretty far along, and then they decided, no, we want to develop. And it was a tough place to find available
money.
Okay. So, yeah, it was a challenge.
But if we decide to do a community park, that I see a hole here, so I'm just using this little map, which doesn't really tell me much. Would we be able to use PIP funds from 6, 8, and 7?
If you can prove the proximity. So, here's the next piece. Let's go forward 3 slides, I think.
You just weren't really
ask all these questions.
Putting you through it there.
Have you ever seen with the issue
Let's go to the map.
Where they go into GIS and they say a community park services, you know, that find a radius, and then they'll draw that circle for you.
And that's some level.
And then it's percentage based on the population within that circle.
Go to the next one. And let's go to the next. And then we'll go back to
your map.
This is the map that
I'm talking about.
So the segue into this is that we have quantitative standards, that's on measured ones, and then we have this whole notion of geographic equity. You know, where should everybody be able to walk to it?
Yeah.
And that's where your question about, geez, 92 acres, can we even get it? 92 acres worth of neighborhood parks, you know, little 2 acres,
anywhere.
That could be 45 2-acre parks.
Yeah.
In 6 districts, that seems excessive.
Ridiculous.
Yeah. Yes. So, but maybe you start and look at, neighborhood park, this does pretty good coverage.
Yeah.
Okay? But, neighborhood park, and a lot of arterial roads.
Yeah.
So you might need 6, little neighborhood parks in that area, and one nice community park. So there's 2 policies. They're not really standards, they're not policies. There's 2 targets that we're using as a hybrid to say, we have these quantitative ones, they justify the funding and the PIP program, but the implementation of this is once you get funding and you establish that you're short those acres, then we look at it and say, realistically, where can we most strategically either buy a new park and serve the residences, fill a gap, any number of those variables. There was an opportunity several years back in District 8, and it was actually right here, to buy the equivalent of a small community park. And we were negotiating the closed property, it had all sorts of back history and all sorts of stuff. But it would have provided a whole other network of parks in an area that was going from low residential density to commercial highway 99 and high tie it. And to have a park there would be huge for, you know, the apartments of the Union Land. Negotiations weren't successful, but that was a chunk. And it backed up to some wetland natural areas and whatever. So it is a challenge to find those spots where there's gaps. Not only are we looking at where the gaps are, but because it's residential that you're trying to serve, you don't want to buy, you don't want to buy commercial land, because that's going to be your revenue producing land. And that's not where people live. Or if they live there, you want that to convert to a business or some kind of you know, job creating land use. So you don't want to buy that property else, it costs a whole lot more. So the layers, the gaps, are actually a little smaller than it looks in this map because we haven't overlaid it with the zoning map.
Why?
Only in the residential areas.
So can we do what I asked, which was you have a hole there between 8, 6, and 7, right in the middle?
Yeah.
If there was 91 acres there, could we do that? And would it account for
like
our
in this gap?
Yeah.
Or in this gap?
Well, back over
yeah. Okay, this gap?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it was done with Hawkinson. It was done with Curtain Creek because it's right on the line. So if funds from both contributed to the acquisition of that. So yes.
What if the 92 acres is all the district?
So, yeah.
So you could theoretically cover your 92 acre shortfall in that one area.
Actually, no. What I would do is go to...
Because it's
your shortfall is for all five.
Because you're talking about a neighborhood park. So go to table 7.
Well, we're doing that. Why is 1, 2, 3, and 4 not?
They're in the city.
They're in the city now.
Oh, got it. Okay. I got you.
And the city doesn't have the money to maintain it.
Yeah, no, I don't care about them then. I was just curious.
I'm teasing that. I don't care about.
But that's still.
But it's not in your purview.
It's not in my area of concern.
It should be, right? You mean if it's concerned.
There should be no political boundary in all this, but economically and politically there is a political boundary. But for all of us who use parks,
we don't
pay any attention. I don't know where the lines are when I'm driving out to the dog park or whatever.
Right,
that's right.
And so that we should probably bring that into consideration, given that we're trying to bring what quality and equity,
right? It would be good not to be frozen.
Right. And so we need to, you know, so these 92 acres aren't exactly.
There's no doubt.
We're actually probably getting a positive number, right?
Yeah.
But I think to keep in mind, though, because I was struggling with that same issue, that you know, at some point you want to say, well, geez, if the average person doesn't care whether he's on state, school, whatever property, and there's essentially a chunk of parks all in District 5, for example, I know they're not, why have a PIF fee there? You know, at some point you have to say, you know, we're doing the public a disservice by taking the money. But the answer to that is, even at actually Take 5 is a great example. If you, even though the northern half of 5 is really well covered, you still want to take PIF fees from that northern half because you can still use them in the southern half. And again, I recognize there's some holes in my argument.
Except you separated it now.
Yeah, and that's the hole I was talking about. But the point being is you still want that money. You can still use it to a point to augment
so
the system.
It's like Social Security, you know? Because you actually, when you built those ones that are there, you use somebody else's donation, not the ones just from there. The people down south in there contributed into that District 5.
So,
but remember, that's one of the reasons we separated from the city, was for economic reasons of, like I said, jokingly, I said they don't have the money to maintain what they have. They got big problems. They've got old parks that need lots of maintenance. Really a difficult situation. Where we're looking at areas that have fairly new stuff, basically. If you go driving around and look at things like I've done, it's amazing to me how it's being taken care of.
Can I ask... Maybe I'll ask this question later.
So I want to get to what Marshall was asking about, the 92 acres, making a more regional thing, and please, I gave you the wrong directions before, but go to the tech memo page 10 and look at table 13. This is the existing need for community parks, and Really, Marshall, what you're talking about is a community facility, not the neighborhood parks.
Yeah.
So the neighborhood parks, yes, 92 acres might be realistically unattainable anytime soon, and who knows. So I will tell you that in the city, when we've done a lot of acquisitions and in the county urban area, we're buying old homes where somebody died, and you're tearing it down.
Yeah.
So there's always those opportunities. So even though it looks thoroughly built out, you may still be able to combine two houses right next to each other. We've done that a number of times in the city. And
what I have at the end of my street.
Yeah. So even though it looks like it's built out and you think, where are we going to get the land? Mm-hmm. You can piece stuff together if you're very patient. But,
Jeremy's often scared of you'll get called in.
So, but table 13 basically does the same analysis with community parks. And look at that number.
So you're telling me we're 172 short
For developed area. But the 94, basically 95 acres is land.
Yeah.
We need 95 acres of community park land in the urban unincorporated area.
I know where there's a chunk in battle ground that's bigger.
So in that case, you could easily make the justification that because the service area for community park is defined as a 3-mile radius, that's 6 miles across. That could go across three districts easily.
Yeah.
Now,
and you could draw PIF funds from all three.
Yeah.
Right? Okay. That's
now,
my main question.
The other question that all of this is also leading you to, is we have six districts. They're distinctly different. They've been collecting funds at slightly different interpretations of funds because their cost adjustment factor for real estate values is different. But that's been since the 90s that it's been these districts, these 10 and the 6 that we have control over. But it's a little bit of a challenge for some of the issues you've already raised of, well, what if we collect a lot here in 8, but we really have a great opportunity in 10, but we don't have enough money collected from 10.
What do we do?
Should we in the future consider, can we take an eraser? And separate, this will get Barbara right now. Let's separate the line between 9 and 10. And manage it in a simpler way. And maybe the line between 6 and 7, or 5, 6 and 7.
Why not all of them?
No.
Well, so there are nuances.
Because the haves would continue to have more. This is the reality of life. And the have-nots would continue to not.
How do you figure that?
That's a question I think it's going to be raised by anybody who feels like, oh my gosh, you know, we're going to get the short end of the stick. But if you look at the criteria that manages the decisions to acquire and to develop, it's looking at what's the level of service and what's the need. Those are two important pieces. So if North Sandy Creek has really got the short stick, and the fairgrounds area got the short stick, and Kalida has a huge amount already, but the districts are combined, the focus is going to be on where the need is. Because it's just so. But now you've got the funding from 9 and 10 in one pot, and say, can we do something significant where the need is the greatest?
Right.
That's the theory.
Now, can we will get an opportunity to vote on that and pass it on?
Well, I think when we're done all this, that's one of the 7 or 8 questions I have for you.
Are you looking for us to decide what is the priority? Is it need or is it, you know, what's the number one thing in your shopping list? What's the one thing you want us to do in putting this all together?
Okay.
Sorry.
There are several. One is equitable distribution.
Thank you.
Is that important? That there is an equitable distribution of parks across the system. So even though you see some blues, you know, there are, even with these blues, there are gaps. And then there are major highways that we try not to have the blue, you know, crossover.
Yeah.
For some people, crossing at a crosswalk is no problem, it's late. But if you've got two or three little toddlers, and you know, it's just like, I'm not doing that for a safe outing to my neighborhood park. So that's a big piece. Should it be equitable? Part of what you all should be determining is, are these standards appropriate? Should we keep them? Where we are today, looking at that gap, Should we keep them? Should we make them higher? Or should we lower them? Or should we keep them? And I would say, well, I'll let you guys decide. That's one thing you should think about. The second is it really important for people to have a park within walking distance of their home? Is it important for public health, for recreation services, quality of life, etc.? And if that's the case, should there be an equitable distribution guiding these guys as they look to acquire land, as they look to develop what's already acquired, what's undeveloped, you know, as they look to prioritize with limited funding, where those should go? Because you really have a very small amount of resources to try to reach all these, you know, good goals.
But if you were to remove the lines, your resources then would be all in one pocket.
Yeah.
Yes.
Which would allow you the freedom then to acquire wherever it came up on the stream. To, in other words, three houses came up, but three people died. Three houses, nice large, land. We can now go and get those where we couldn't do that when we were districts.
Well,
but isn't part of this driven by state law? Where isn't it at the state level that it defined? I'm trying to remember where I read that the actual dollar amount of PIF and the way it's calculated. The fact that mine might have been $4,300 for this house, but over here in this other district, it's only $3,200.
That's right.
$100 for PIF for that one. And that was all based on the money being kept within that district. And that is mandated. So why would we discuss erasing lines we don't have the power to do?
Well, but we might have, because it's state. Look, the question is
here's the challenge with that. Anything that you've already collected in 9 to date as Fifth District 9, there must be a nexus between value to the people in Fifth District 9 for any of that money that's spent.
Uh-huh.
So if Fifth District 9 right now has $2.3 million, you can't come in and erase this line and say, we're going to spend that $2.3 million over here.
Okay. You're just saying you can do that, but moving forward. But then we don't have to don't we then have to recalculate and make the equity decision so that the PIF collected for new buildings over that entire area would be the same. And in that case, you would erase that thing of down in Philida. You can collect more dollars because the house values are higher and the, what do they call that term, demand? Demand factor. People will pay it there.
Right.
But if you built that same house in Hazeldale, if you had that same thing, it would never sell because...
So that's a challenge. So
that would be a real business decision that would be hugely impactive.
Totally different. Because one could collect a whole lot more if it stays separate than another.
Absolutely.
But it would eliminate giving money back, too.
Yeah.
So what are the problems?
Because you've got time.
It's complex.
But the time period is to what was collected in that particular area.
Plus, the problem with this is that it's like many school districts that your tax dollars go to schools that your kids don't go to, right? And so in the same way, if I live in 10, but you create a park in 5, right? Erase all the lines. That money just got wasted because I have no access to that.
Yeah, right? But we still pay school tax. For example, I don't have kids in school anymore. I'm still paying school tax.
Right, and that's
a lot of school tax.
That's why
to be exact.
Yeah,
so, I mean,
just the idea of
something. So the nexus has to be met.
Right, it has to be.
With an impact fee. Period. The nexus has to be met. You have to be able to say that these houses being built over here. And the growth and population that they're adding to, the fee they're paying, relates to the fact that that's the area that they're impacting. So you would have a hard time saying, oh, it's across the whole urban area, which is probably why way back they made 10 whole different districts, because there were very different characteristics in all those districts.
They're going to crush out if you start combining.
If you combine, if you arbitrarily erase all the lines, that would be hard.
Oh yeah,
you can't.
Because I don't think you would gain anything for a long time.
Sure, and just
and
say
the weight would be off. But
just say that there's people that you don't like in 10, right? And no, I'm going to say that's it's politics, right? It's funny, but 10 and 9 and 8 are all merged together, and they, you know, you're basically, that big grouping would then try to get grants, right, receive grants, and now receives, you know, $100 million to purchase new property or develop new land or whatever. It's rather than having each individual, the problem is it becomes more centralized. Where to receive funds becomes more centralized, and efficiency is multiple ways to accomplish the same thing. That's
but we're being asked to look at 20 years.
Mm-hmm.
In 20 years, those lines are going to be pretty insignificant.
They might.
So all I'm saying is I'd like to know that in the general plan, when we get ready to do all of this, we would like to somewhere in there say that we do see the advantage in the future of removing those lines so that the funds, the PIP funds that are still dribbling in are equitably... in other words, that's what, I just want to see that. Okay, right. I'd like to see it in there.
And it may not be, you know, feasible to remove all the lines, but it might be feasible to combine districts together, two of them, you know, say instead of, you know, six districts, we have three, you know, so it's more centralized.
I just see where it gives us so much more flexibility,
mm-hmm.
because the funding can go, you can so much more decide where you really need it, rather than, oh, gee, you know, in number five, in the areas that we have there, gee, we got all this money, we have to build a park here, no matter what.
And I would think that it would also help us to go out and buy those community-sized properties,
yeah.
you know, when we've got, you know, districts combined.
So there are some advantages and disadvantages.
Yeah.
You don't have to decide today which works are better. But what we will do as the next step up is look at the hypothetical of, if you combine these, how would the need be different? You know, is that an advantage or disadvantage? And look at 2020 and 2035. How would the need be different? And try to weigh in some of these different options. Like, does it make sense? Doesn't make sense? And there are advantages and disadvantages. The money collected already at the individual districts still has to stay in those individual districts.
And I'm buying.
Blurring or erasing the lines creates a little bit of a headache in terms of the budget office has to recalculate stuff and cycle up the development office.
I guess I'm just saying, when this is built out,
When
we are basically dribbling PIFs and fees in, you're not going to have large developments. I mean, in some of those areas you might, but in 2035 or 20, you're not going to have access to a heck of a lot of land in those areas.
Right.
You're not going to be collecting
you
a lot.
And
you're not going to collect a lot of PIF money.
Well, remember also, though, 2020 or 35 will have gone through another boundary review.
Yeah, some lines may have changed.
That's true.
8 and 6 and 5 is bigger.
Right.
Well, the thing we did this year was combine acquisition and development.
Yeah.
So all the money's collected right now because we might be built out. We don't need to buy any more property, but we can use those funds
to develop
the properties that we do have that we've been holding in reserve.
Yeah.
And so
that's why you bank it.
Yeah. Exactly. All right. So why don't we take a break? And we're almost there.
If number 9 is making too much money, they just cut it out. Make them put a line instead of erasing.
Well, if it's based off house values, you're always going to have, you know, those areas where the houses are
really small. I live in an area where there are a lot of
children. So, huge lot, of course.
My son's in the area where we're going to have a lot of houses.